You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are talking through another theme, and we're slow and steady wins the race with these, but they are important, so we're going to keep going. Another control and safety theme. And last week we talked about cleaning play, so obviously the antidote will be mess-making play. And I've actually done an episode specifically about a listener question about mess-making play. So if you have not gone in order, please go back to episode one and start there and go all the way through. Or if you happen to have missed the episode that I did about mess-making play, specifically answering a listener question, that would be helpful to pair with this one because we're actually talking about mess-making theme today. So basically, it's kind of self-explanatory like cleaning play is, but mess-making play is when the child actually makes a mess in the room. That can look different. It can look in a lot of different ways. But essentially, either the characters make a mess, so the people that they are actually using as part of their play, so the miniatures, the animals, the figures, the characters, whomever, they are making a mess, or the child, him or herself, is making a mess. This would include pouring water and making a mess with water, not just pouring play, because that's different. If they're just pouring from one cup to another, different theme. But pouring water around the room, intentionally pouring it on the floor, pouring it onto stools so it will fall over like a waterfall, that kind of thing. And I know some of you don't have sinks or water in your room, and so you're horrified by everything that I'm saying. But that happens in playrooms with water access. So this also happens with sand. So if they make a mess with sand, some of you do not have sand trays in your room and you're horrified, but that happens with sand tray. And then obviously making a mess with toys. So sometimes kids will dump bins of small objects. So if you have, oh my gosh, I'm in my coaching right now, the year-long training program that you can find more about at Play Therapy Now, if you would like to look into that, playtherapynow.com. But one of my therapists that's training with me right now, she had pony beads in her room and in a little bucket, and the kid dumped the entire bucket of pony beads into the sand. And I was reviewing her play session video and you could see it on her face. She didn't react so that the child knew, but you could see it on her face. She was like, tell me you did not just dump every single one of those in the sand tray. So look, kids make messes, right? And it is not always easy. It is not always fun. And trust me, the cleanup is a bear. But they will dump bins of things. So if you have wooden beads, wooden blocks, small anything, and they're all in a container, they will dump them. They will throw stuff up in the air and let it cascade down all around them. They will swipe shelves. They will dump things out, and they are not using it. That is the key to mess making play, is they are not actively playing with things. Because look, sometimes a child is in frantic, chaotic, ping pong ball frenzy zone, right? When they're in the playroom. So they go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and the next. And by the 50-minute mark, the room looks like it has been mess-making play, but the difference is they have actually used all of those toys. That is very different. Mess-making play is specifically making a mess, just dumping stuff, spilling stuff, pouring stuff out, scattering stuff all over the room, opening games and throwing like Monopoly money everywhere, throwing the pieces of Risk or Battleship everywhere. Oh my Lord, have mercy. My Risk and my Battleship pieces are like the bane of my existence in mess-making play. But that is mess-making play, how it will present itself in the playroom. So I wanted to kind of paint some clear pictures on that. Now, what might it mean for the child? So they may actually be angry at you. So for a variety of reasons, when kids are frustrated, angry, upset, aggressive toward the therapist, sometimes they will actually try to demonstrate that and make it very clear that they are unhappy with you by destroying your room because they know that you have to clean it up. So that is one way that they can show that dynamic in their relationship with you specifically. And actually, let me add on to that. So there are a lot of kids that will need messmaking play thematically as they work through their stuff. So I don't want to paint this picture that this is a universal thing that kids will do. More often than not, when kids need messmaking play, they need it for other reasons, and you will see it pretty frequently. So that stated, I do want to share there are every once in a while kids who are actually trying to cross a line so that they no longer have to come to therapy. So they will actually destroy your room, wreck your room, ruin your room, and it's messmaking on steroids. And the intention and the goal is actually to see, well, if I do this, maybe she'll be so mad at me that she'll kick me out and I never have to come back. So it's a testing of the relationship. It's a testing of the boundaries. It's a testing of your patience and your unconditional love and acceptance. So there will be times when kids will destroy a room, and it is messmaking play, but it is means to an end. That is not the norm, but I want to make you aware with that kind of child, the intention is different. It is actually to see where you will break, and then therefore you will say, I don't want you to come anymore, which is the absolute worst thing that you would ever do. So don't ever let a child destroy your room and have that be a breaking point for you, because the child-centered non-directive model, we meet the child where they are, we believe that they know the work that they need to do, and we accept anything that they need or want or desire as long as they're safe, I'm safe, and the toys aren't broken on purpose, right? So don't give in to the intent that, well, if I destroy your room, you'll be so upset that you'll say you don't want me to come anymore, because that's their agenda in the first place. And so when they're wrecking your room, if it's that kind of kid, I typically say things like, because this is also, sorry, sidebar, but these are the same types of kids that will cuss you out. They will say the most hateful, mean things. They will intentionally try to hurt you. They will intentionally try to break every unspoken rule, because you don't even express rules until they're needed, right? Limits are only needed when they're needed. So it's not like you go in and say, this is a limit, this is a limit, this is a limit, but they assume that there will be limits, right? And they will try to break every single one. That type of kid is literally scared to death of doing the work, and they're avoiding and they're resisting. And so they are trying to just grasp at straws. What could I possibly do that would mean I never have to come back here again? Well, if I make her so mad, maybe she'll tell mom and dad she doesn't want me here anymore. And really, that's conditional love and it's conditional acceptance. So messmaking sometimes goes along with that. That was a related aside, but important for you to know. So let's circle back to possible meanings. The first is it could actually be their frustration, their anger, their aggression, their relationship with you. Second meaning is kids play out how they feel internally. So if they feel completely chaotic, frantic, frenzied, disorganized, messy, all over the place inside, they have to externalize that through their behavior and their play. So often kids that make messes, it is truly representative of what's going on inside. And then another potential meaning is they might actually be finally, this is my favorite example of why a child may messmake. When they have been so regimented, so controlled, so people-pleasing, so perfectionistic, so regulated, so prim and proper, and everything has to be just so, and those typically your high-anxiety kids, your high-pressure kids, when you have those kinds of kids, they finally start to try out what it feels like to let go. They try what it feels like to make a mess. They try what it feels like to be a little bit free and uninhibited. My favorite kind of messmaking play. I mean, I never like messmaking play because it's a disaster when they leave. But that catalyst is one of my favorites because it shows so much growth and healing and change in the child. So they've been historically, everything goes back in its place. Nothing can ever be left out, and they have to have everything just so. And then they will finally let loose and make a mess. And sometimes it's just a really small one at first. Sometimes it's a room wreck. But in either scenario, they have made progress and they've realized, I'm free in here. And I need to just do what I need to do no matter what that looks like. So that's always an exciting one. And then finally, it could be that the child is testing the therapist to see if you can handle their messiness emotionally, psychologically, mentally. So let's expand on that a little bit. So it's like, hey, I need to make this mess physically, tangibly in the room. I need to see what your reaction is. I need to see if you can handle it. I need to see if you get emotional. I need to see if you still accept me, if you still love me, if we still can move forward with the same relationship that we had before I made the mess. And it's a testing. And essentially the child is saying, can you handle the rest of my mess? Can you handle if I let you see my emotion? Can you handle if I let you see the deep stuff? What about all the psychological and mental mess that I'm dealing with? Can you handle that? So it can also be a deeper level of testing to see if you are prepared, and they need to kind of feel that out. So mess making play, very, very significant and important. And again, you can see how a child can use this exact same theme coming from a variety of different roots. So it's helpful to kind of understand those possibilities and make sense of those as you're working with the child. So there's your mess making play. And the good news is we only have one more theme in this category. So next week we will be talking through sorting play. And that will be the final one in our control and safety themes. And then we'll be ready to move on to the next category. So we've done it almost. All right, y'all. I'm so very grateful for each and every one of you. If you'd like to email me, I'd love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And with every single theme that we cover, with every single one of these that we go over and that we talk about and that you process and that you digest and you let it kind of ruminate and become part of your knowledge as you work with kids, it is only serving as a way for you to better understand the value of child-centered play therapy. Because these themes do not define what we do. It just helps make sense of what's going on for the child. But it really does give you a grounding and a foundation that is so valuable, so that as you're articulating to parents, as you're communicating with other adults in the child's world, you can intelligently speak about what you're seeing, what is emerging, what the child is working on, why that matters, how it's helping them to heal. There's so much power in communicating the value of what goes on. And we're not just playing in there, and neither is the child. There is so much work that takes place on both sides. The therapist is working, the child is working, and then both of you are collectively working together. And that cannot be stressed enough. And themes are one of the ways that you can prove, I'm air quoting, you can prove that significant work is taking place. So I hope that these continue to encourage you, continue to support you. And I'm just grateful to be a small part of your week. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.